Next three are Don Singer, Craig Barrett's, and Rick Michelson.
Morning.
Morning. Don Singer, 416 Northwest Hermosa Boulevard, Portland. Commissioners, I'm here today to offer my strong support for the amendments to the Northwest Parking Plan. These amendments represent long, hard hours of deliberation facilitated by PBOT and implement an amended plan that can be supported by a majority of the neighborhood residents, be they commercial, residential, or institutional. Parking is vital to the health of these dense, urbanized, mixed-use districts, and the combination of regulated on-street and plentiful off-street parking helps maintain neighborhood economic vitality. Just look at the Pearl District. The combination of plentiful on- and off-street options not only helped the initial success of the area, but has helped maintain its vitality. The current parking plan in Northwest Portland is a strong first step in addressing the neighborhood's parking needs. As promised by PBOT, we look forward to continuing the discussion of off-street options for the Northwest District, which is challenged by the lack of available sites adequately sized to accommodate off-street parking and are economically feasible to build. I would like to thank the mayor and Josh Albert for their leadership on the process at the outset of the administration, Rob Birchfield and Bill Hoffman of PBOT, Commissioner Novick, Tavo and Phil from the NWDA. We have all accomplished in 6 months what we failed to accomplish in 15 years. Thank you and a job well done.
Good morning, commissioners. I'm Craig Barrett's, and I'm Vice President of Development for Conway, responsible for the development of that site. First and foremost, I want to thank all the volunteer hours that the stakeholder group that I was a part of put in to sort of begin the formulation of this parking plan. I think it's very admirable that all those individuals and elected officials and appointed individuals spent tirelessly working towards this compromise. Sure. Oh, that's okay. I thought maybe I did something wrong or getting feedback or often do that. It's a great plan. I think the keynote, though, is the review, the check and adjust, is an absolute must. I think it needs to happen right away, frequently, because there's going to be unintended consequences. I'm just sitting here listening to how this is going to operate. I can think of several. Conway has 1,000 employees, so that means we get 1,000 permits. But we already have parking, so perhaps not. I just see some complicating things, and I also see some retailers that are sort of outside the core, not having the advantages of those that are being inside the core. And I think those are the kinds of things that need to be addressed. Those are just examples that I can think of off the top. We also might want to amend it a little bit for pedestrians that stand outside of Salt and Straw. Kidding. There seems to be quite a lineup there, but in any case.
You can tell them to go to Alberta Street, and there they only have to wait 2 hours to get
it. Just 2 hours, okay, all right. And there's a place on Mississippi that I hear is pretty good, too. I also encourage council to consider parking management similar to this in other retail areas, Mississippi, Alberta, Hawthorne, Division. You know, obviously those areas are becoming much more dense and need some sort of management as well. Those are my comments. Thank you very much.
Good afternoon. I'm Rick Michelson. I'm a resident, a property owner, and a business owner with offices directly across from Salt and Straw, so I really get to see the impact there. I've been working on this project for 36 years, and it's really nice to see that through the cooperation of everybody and the great efforts of the city staff at Nob Hill and NWDA, I can finally take it off my to-do list. It's really going to happen. As everybody said, this is a starting point and it's going to take adjustment during its initial and later periods, and I want to make 4 points that I think we need to look at. The first is data collection. To really be able to evaluate this in 2014, we need to know what's going on today. So I would really suggest that one of the startup costs considered is really collecting some data on parking usage in as it exists in September or October in this year to be the baseline. The second is enforcement. It's really easier to enforce the areas that have metered parking than the areas around them. We need to have an equal level of enforcement throughout the district, whether you're in a meter or not. The other is the parking meter fees. Bill talked about our goal of having 15% of spaces available for people to come and park at any time. That's so people don't have to circle the block. And had a discussion about raising the rates if the spaces were overoccupied. I think we also really need to seriously consider lowering the rates if they're underoccupied. If they're not being used, then the parking meters are not doing their job, which is not to raise revenue, but to increase turnover. If you look at MLK and Grand and Central East Side now, you'll see it's really easy to park because the parking people are not paying for the meters, and there's probably a 50-60% utilization. We need to look at adjusting the meter rates up and down as time goes on. Finally, Bill missed the fourth exception to the four-hour rule, and that is in the non-metered areas, existing time parking will remain at their existing time rather than moving to 4 hours, because after all, if the business owners there are happy with 1 or 2 hours in front of their businesses, why would we discourage turnover by allowing longer parking there? And I know it's in his notes, he just didn't mention that. Once again, I really want to thank everybody. I'm looking forward to this beginning. I'm looking forward to the adjustments over the next few years. And hopefully by the time I retire, it'll be settled into a norm. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Does anybody else want to testify?
That's all who signed up.
Lightning would like to. Anybody else who would like to come forward now, please do so. Good morning.
Good morning. My name is Lightning. One of the issues I have is, as we all know in the past, there's been a lot of private developers that wanted to build parking structures in Northwest Portland, and they ran into a lot of resistance. And now what we're seeing is, and I'm hearing, is that we might not have enough parking out there for all the people. Now, one of the things I'm not hearing today is, why don't we want to develop more parking structures? Now, I've heard that limited space, maybe not enough property out there. I'd have to maybe disagree with you on that. I think there is, and I think a lot of developers would jump at the opportunity to maybe build a parking structure. And if we want to have the rates drop, that's definitely one way to do it. We put more supply out in the marketplace, and that will drop the rates. Now, it sounds to me like everything I've been hearing, we don't have enough parking. We want more turnover. We want to reduce permits for the employees. But let's face it, I think developing more parking structures or figuring out a way to maybe work with some private developers that have some parking structures near Northwest Portland is to our advantage. And I'd like to maybe see and hear a little bit more from private developers who might have an interest in doing that, in putting more parking spaces in the marketplace to drop the rates and make them more affordable for more of the masses out there that want to be down in Northwest Portland and doing their shopping, living in the apartments, and being in that area. Thank you.
Thank you. Good morning.
Morning. I'm Mitchell Bailey. I live out at Gateway. And if you don't happen to notice, as you, Amanda Fritz, claim, you went out to Gateway, and then it's like, what are we going to do? It's like, now it seems like to you people, you just go on through and say, oh, let's let it die. I'm seeing the future of Gateway as a cemetery of what used to be the Elks and all this, or the Fred Meyer and the Gateway Shopping Center. All because a transit agency can't seem to utilize Park and Ride. And I'm even trying my darndest to get another person from any department, commissioners or mayor, of the mayor's office and all this. And then it's like, what can we do? But it's like you people are just not caring about anything. When it comes to Gateway, that's like, look at Glisten and 99th and 100th Avenue. They may not have on-site parking for their for their guests and residents. Just think about that, because other than that, then it's like, oh yeah, we need it. I'm pushing for permit parking, but these other places, they just don't seem to want to go on through and pay $60 because they can't seem to afford $60 for permit parking. And then it's like, then why have a historic gateway district? I'm seeing everything just going right into the ground and being one big parking garage for TriMet. Since they now have three trains, they may have five trains in the near future, and I already told them they're at TriMet, and I said, fine. I already know I'm not getting one from the Elks. I'm not getting one from the Oregon Clinic or the Providence Clinic, so there's your chance to go on through and expand. Then after that, I'm already waiting for someone to knock on my door and say this, like, oh yeah, we're taking everything now, even way beyond, possibly to 122nd and Burnside and Halsey. And then TriMet will have all their parking spaces. They'll have a park and ride there at 102nd and jobs lost, along with shelters. So I encourage anyone to go on through and at least take a look out there and say, what can we do about it? Because if nothing's going to get done, then I'd say, fine, that's it. Why have it? And then it's just a destroyed area, a future cemetery of what used to be the Gateway Terrace or the Gateway Elks or wherever at that time. And it's like, oh yeah, let's visit this cemetery and all that, what it used to be at these times. That's what I'm seeing Gateway as a cemetery. This other one went on through. He lived out in Laurelhurst, and now he lives at the Gateway Terrace as well. And then it's like, oh yeah, they got stuff done at Laurelhurst. Why can't they get stuff done at Gateway?
Thank you for your testimony. Thank you. And would you like staff back up?
Yes, I would. So I had just a couple of questions about the permit, the employee permit parking, and I realize this is all sort of being implemented and maybe fine-tuned, so if you don't know the answer, that's fine right now.
If I don't know, Marnie does.
Okay. So for employers that have off-street parking for their employees or for some number of their employees, does that get factored into the net number of permits? Is there like a net permit you get under that scenario?
It doesn't. We're not differentiating between employers that have off-street availability or not. Our permits cost money, and so our belief is that if a permit's not needed, it's not going to be asked for. But these are, as I said earlier, the program is going to be evolutionary. It has to be, and at some point, it's clear to all parties, business owners, residents alike, that parking needs to be managed, and in some cases it means trade-offs. And so I think that what we're really doing is putting in place a process that will allow for those discussions and those kinds of decisions. But right now we're not looking at off-street availability.
And then the definition of an employee, I assume, includes full or part-time people?
Yes.
Great. Okay, thanks.
Any other questions?
Madam Chair, just to understand our procedure today, we have a resolution, I take it, which we're going to vote on, and then we have an ordinance which goes to a second reading. Is that correct?
You took the words right out of my mouth, Commissioner Fish, yes. So it's 733 will pass to second reading next week, and we will now call the roll on 732.
Saltzman?
Well, I'm pinching myself just to make sure I'm not dreaming. Apparently, this is not a dream. This is a great day. I have been on the council for 15 years, so I think I've witnessed the most of the Northwest parking wars. And so it's really a remarkable, remarkable accomplishment here. I want to start by thanking Mayor Hales, who agreed to sort of relook at what the council had passed late in 2012, and Commissioner Novick also for bringing everybody together. And I think, as Christy White said, in about 6 months, people were able to share their views and, you know, be respected. And what emerged is a consensus with the business and the residents all supporting this, you know, maybe with some, all certain have degrees of concern, but they are on board with starting this, and I'm sure that fine-tuning will be necessary. But this is a great accomplishment, and so I want to thank certainly Bill and Marnie and the others in PBOT and all the other residents and businesses who came together to make this plan reality. So let's give it a go and hope it's successful. Aye.
Novick?
This is indeed a great day, and I'd like to thank all the members of the previous council, Commissioner Saltzman, Commissioner Leonard, Mayor Adams, Commissioner Fritz, and Commissioner Fish for stepping up and finally taking on this issue last year. And I'd like to note that I thank Commissioner Fish, even though he was the no vote on the plan in December, because at the time he recognized it was an easy piece and drew the historical analogy that the Treaty of Versailles ended World War I, but it also marked the beginning of World War II. And everybody has taken that advice to heart and worked to build a lasting peace. I am incredibly grateful to Bill and Marnie and Rob and the other folks at PBOT. I'm incredibly grateful to the community members, many of whom have been working on this issue for years and years and years, for sticking it out. And I also, this is a great day. It's also a sad day because Josh Alpert and the mayor's office has won such widespread recognition that from his work here. It's my understanding that President Obama tapped him this morning to be a special envoy to the Middle East. So we'll miss Josh very, very much. I'm pleased to vote aye.
Fish?
This is indeed a historic occasion. You know, yesterday I pulled up the Northwest District Plan of 2003 because I wanted to refresh my memory on the history. And we've heard, as Dan just mentioned, this process dates back to 1999. So we're approaching the 15th anniversary. And that's when PBOT first started working with Northwest residents and businesses on an on-street parking plan. So let's take a stroll down memory lane for a moment. In 1999, Amanda Fritz was a member of the Planning Commission.
That's Rick.
And so was Rick. Dan Salzman was finishing his first year on the council, a council which included Councillor Charlie Hales. I was a practicing civil rights lawyer, and Steve Novick was gearing up to fight Bill Sizemore's Measure 91. It's taken 14 years to reach this day. That means this plan is older than my son, a rising fourth grader. It has outlasted three mayors, Katz, Potter, and Adams, and it has tested the skills and patience of a generation of neighborhood leaders. When this issue came to council last December, I frankly felt like a guest at a shotgun wedding. The solution offered looked more imposed than inspired. And one of the things that I've learned in this job is that in developing good public policy, compromise is not a dirty word. It reminds me of the old proverb, perfect is often the enemy of the good. What I observed in December was confusion and distrust with deep roots, very deep roots. And I concluded that the council's substitute plan, no matter how well-intentioned, was not sustainable, in part because no one owned it. So I voted no. Since then, a number of things have changed. Portland elected a new mayor. Mayor Hales has appointed a new commissioner in charge of PBOT. And all the parties agreed to take a fresh look at an old problem. With new leadership and a new approach, citizens who have been part of the Northwest parking wars for over a decade sat down and hammered out a compromise. All of the key elements of the revised plan reflect give and take by the parties. And we've heard the various components, the plan management, design, permitting, parking hours, even the map changes. Frankly, at a time when division and gridlock dominate our government in Washington, it is heartening to see neighborhood and business leaders work together for the common good. So I, too, today want to join with my colleagues in extending a hearty thanks to everyone who made this day possible. To you, Commissioner Novick, and to your great team at PBOT. To Mayor Hales and Josh Alpert, for giving it a second look. To our friends at the NWDA and the Knob Hill Business Association, including Pat and Phil and Juliet and Tavo, and of course Christine, Christy, Bill, Marnie, and Rob. Congratulations to everyone on a job well done, and today I proudly vote aye.
Fritz. This just goes to show that sometimes a good process and an ongoing process can result in a very good product, and I applaud Rick Michelson for his 36 years of dedication to this, and also all of the Northwest neighbors. This is your plan, and this is the plan for the Business Association as well as the Neighborhood Association and employees and residents. It's an example of neighbors with differing opinions working with government officials to find the common solution. Everyone has made sacrifices to reach what is either a compromise or a grand bargain, and I think it's probably a little of both. I'm happy to see that we're doing this. I feel a little like a surrogate mother must feel, because last year, throughout the year of 2012, I received hundreds of emails from folks on all sides, very upset with the proposal that was on the table. And it was extremely tempting to just let the session expire and not bring anything to council in December. And I felt that that was not the right thing to do. So I was by no means the instigator of the current plan. Mayor Adams, through his time working with Mayor Katz, and then he was very urgent that we should pass something last year. And in deference to that, I proposed a plan which gave birth to an infant which only its mother and three people out of 3 hours of testimony thought was in any way beautiful. And that was in part my intent, because unless we had a place to kick the can down the road and to say, well, if not what was on the table, then what else, I don't believe that we would have gotten to this place. And in fact, it's somewhat remarkable that many of the elements of what we're adopting with great consensus today were in Mayor Adams' proposal last year. So I'm very appreciative that by having that squalling infant, which, as I say, was really quite a bother to everybody, given to the community, and then with the leadership of Bill Hoffman and Marnie Glicker and Commissioners Novick, Mayor Hales, Josh Alpert, came to consensus, a remarkable degree of consensus. I've had one email that I've been able to see in the past week, and that was where we support this plan. So that's a remarkable achievement, and I appreciate everyone. I also want to thank Milena Malone in my office, who was part of the triage last year and also reviewed this plan, Tom Bizzo, my chief of staff, and others. A good day. Aye. Thank you very much, everybody, for participating in that, and we will vote on 7:33 next week. And so we now move to the regular agenda item 7:44.
Revise enforcement provisions to standardize language related to Bureau of Environmental Services program enforcement activities.
Commissioner Fish.
Thank you, President Fritz. Marvita Redding and Matthew Kriblitz, if you could come forward. We have a very brief presentation, and I'm going to turn it over to the pros from the Bureau of Environmental Services. Welcome.
Good morning. Good morning, commissioners. Thank you for the opportunity to be here with you. I'm Marvita Redding, the Pollution Prevention Services Group Manager of Environmental Services. With me is Matt Kribley, our Environmental Compliance Manager, and we are here to talk with you about our compliance and enforcement programs. Why environmental compliance and enforcement? It's something that sometimes people don't necessarily think of in connection with sewer and stormwater systems, but there are some very important reasons why we have such programs. We want to protect the sewer lines and the treatment plant. We're talking about the collection systems, public health and safety with those collection systems, worker health and safety, as well as the actually very delicate balances that are in treatment plant activities. The second reason is preventing pollution from entering streams and rivers. We have discharges to rivers and streams through our extensive stormwater system, discharges to rivers through our wastewater treatment plant as well. It's important to keep pollutants from being there and harming those. Recover costs for system damages. Good stewardship of our assets is very important to us. We have a considerable investment, and the public has a considerable investment in our systems. And further, ensure compliance with permits. As many of you know, we are a heavily regulated entity with permits for our treatment plants as well as our stormwater systems. I wanted to give you a couple of examples of the kinds of things that we address. The first one is rags blocking the pump system, the pump station. This is the type of thing that you sometimes see where you get sewer system backups as well as the pump station not working correctly. What you see here is rags in a pump station that we had to pull out. We found them, and actually it was a care facility that was discharging excessive rags into the system, creating it and causing actually pumps to non-function.
So let's be very clear. We want to make it clear to everyone listening, please do not flush your rags down the toilet.
That's good. There are many things. Thank you, Commissioner.
Havoc with our system.
There are many things that can obstruct a system. Construction debris, Christmas trees, other kinds of things that people have used, vandalizing systems. So it's very important. The next one is fish oil discharge to the slough. We investigated that particular one, our sewer systems. That's an illegal discharge.
I know. We have a citizen wondering how you get a tree into the system. And
I see. Actually, you just stuff it into the lines one at a time until you create a major overflow, which we had a number of years ago on our Sullivan line, actually. And it was Christmas trees after Christmas, which were no longer valuable to anyone, and they were laying in a parking lot, and someone systematically took them and placed them in the line. The next one was fish oil to discharge to the slough. We investigated that particular one where there was illegal dumping of those materials. The last one, and hopefully we don't affect your food this morning, is recover costs. Again, that's a line replacement with regard to grease discharge. Sometimes the lines can be so occluded, and depending upon what's there, it will damage the line.
Arvita, we should just put a plug in here for the FOG program, because that's the program the council adopted to get at this particular problem, which you're looking at, which
is grease. Thank you.
Clogs our pipes.
And so I'm going to turn it over to Matt to talk about our process.
So we attempted to develop four basic goals. We worked on this program for about a year in evaluating our compliance with the five codes that you're looking at today. And we had four basic goals in developing this, and looking at streamlining, evaluate our codes, look at conflicts and redundancy, how we can improve our consistency amongst those codes. It shouldn't matter what code is violated. It should have the same process. Transparency, once a violation is received, is the process clear and easy for the violator to navigate? Can they get through the enforcement process? Will they know what to expect in terms of the violation, in terms of the penalty and the appeal process? Housekeeping, the goal there is to make terminology and processes consistent. We have currently, we have a warning notice could mean very different things. A warning notice under one code could mean your very first violation and no penalty. Under another code, that could mean a mid-level penalty, $250 or more. Also, we're looking at updating and updating the process and updating our penalties from mid-1990 levels, which they were originally established, and they've never been modified since then. In developing this, we've had a number of things going on throughout this process, but about 4 or 5 months ago, we sent out notifications to potentially affected businesses, primarily our permitted industries and some non-permitted, as well as business organizations, environmental organizations, and invited them to two meetings to talk about potential rule sets and how this might look. We held the two meetings in March and April, and we got some really good comments back, primarily not about the amount of penalties, but primarily about how we process things. They want an appeals process that, again, is very clear and gives them plenty of time to respond. Often in permitted with permitted industries, the headquarters might be in Maryland or somewhere else, and they want that plenty of time to be able to process that back to, so they can actually appeal without without missing deadlines. We also had a public comment and hearing on the rule set, and we heard no comment or any issues associated with that. And then finally, what this will look like is from five codes, we're going to basically combine these into one compliance and enforcement rule set. So it will be five codes that manage different things, as Marvita was talking about, from stormwater to management of our public green streets to some of our erosion control, as well as our sanitary system, our collection system, and our treatment system into one basic rule set. There'll be three classes of violations, and those be based on deviation from codes. And then, of course, there would be a warning notice for very minor violations as well. We're creating one consistent enforcement and appeal process. So currently there are multiple processes. There will be one set of enforcement process and one appeal process. That appeal process will actually have two stages where a person can come through and administratively appeal directly to us. And then if that's still not satisfactory, they would still be able to appeal to code hearings. We're going to create consistent terminology, as I talked about before, some problems there. I think that will be a lot easier for customers to navigate. And then our penalties will be, the maximum will be increased, as well as penalties for repeat and significant violations. In the past, our violations have been one size fits all. What we're trying to do is say, if you continue to violate city code, you continue to impact city systems, you continue to impact the environment, you're going to have a higher penalty than somebody who's done this the first time or had minor impacts. And then the final thing that we're looking at is cost recovery for damages to city assets. And so when there is an impact and they have, as the occluded line that Marvita referred to with the grease, we get something like that, we can recover costs associated with our costs to remove that line, reinstall the line, clean the line, whatever the case would be. And that is it.
Thank you very much. Thank you. Council questions?
I'm just wondering what the public involvement on this has been. The fat soil and grease in particular has been particularly controversial over the past year or so. We'll ask for testimony, but I'm wondering if this process has been well publicized.
Mm-hmm. Well, the enforcement process, I believe, has. Again, we had the notification where we had two informational meetings where we brought businesses in and we talked to them. We went through a number of scenarios of what enforcement would look like, what the penalties would look like, what the appeals process would look like. And generally, the comments were, we just need a better process. We need to have a transparent appeal process. But
Did you specifically contact Venture Portland and the Portland Business Alliance to let them know that this was coming forward?
I believe so, yes. I'd have to look at exactly which business organizations were contacted, but I'm sure Venture was, and I'm almost positive that Portland Business Alliance was.
Thank you.
President Fritz, on the fats, oils, and grease program in particular, my understanding is that actually it's been applied to businesses sort of one by one and only has been applied to a given business after that business has sort of received kind of a visit from you guys and an explanation of steps that they can take in order to mitigate their cost. Is that correct?
That's correct. As part of our public involvement, we did a wide public involvement activity, but one of the key aspects of that particular program is the one-on-one relationship, as Commissioner Novick has pointed out, where we go in and talk with the business about fats, oils, and grease, and deal with their issues there. It's rather labor-intensive, but at the same time, I think it's been very good with regard to people knowing and understanding what their opportunities are, and particularly with regard to incentives that they may already be employing with regard to composting and other things to mitigate their costs. And so that's one of the key aspects of our program implementation.
Commissioner Novick, one thing that we are looking at as part of a fresh look at the FOG program is that once BES is finished with its site visit and going through the incentives and sort of customizing a plan, we want to make sure that that's linked up and consistent with a subsequent visit by an inspector from the Bureau of Development Services, particularly a plumber, who has to come in and sort of bless all the work. And we're, to the extent possible, trying to make sure that from a customer's point of view, there's a unified relationship with the city and particularly the two bureaus that have jurisdiction over this.
Thank you. Did you have a sign-up sheet?
We do. Joe Walsh.
Thank you. And if anybody else wants to testify on this issue, please come forward.
My name is Joe Walsh. I represent Individuals for Justice. During the testimony, one of the things that bothered me is there was no public comment about the raising of the penalties. That seems to me to indicate a failure to advertise to the public that they had an opportunity to testify. Now, you all know that I've been working on water issues for the last year, and I knew nothing of this. And if an activist that's working on a water issue doesn't know or wasn't notified that he had an opportunity to testify, then who does? So I would be interested in the staff saying, when it came to the public and raising the penalties, who they contacted and what they did. Did they put it in the newspaper? Did they send it out by email? Or did they just talk among themselves? So that's one great interest. I don't like the raising of penalties, especially in this area. The water rates right now are very controversial, but they are high. I think we can all agree with that. So the water rates and the sewerage rates should not be raised at this point. The penalty should not be raised. So if you have a penalty and someone is doing something consistently and you need to raise the penalties there, I can understand that. But to raise, as a general rule, just the penalties if somebody screws up is, to me, not a good move. Because the people right now are very sensitive to the water. They're very sensitive to the sewage. They're very sensitive to the environment. So when you say, okay, we're going to raise the penalties, and God forbid I'm defending the Business Alliance here, but I would imagine that they would be upset more than anybody else because their penalties are going to be higher.
Mr. Walsh?
Yes.
I'd just like to make the point that actually, if people are doing things that degrade the sewer system, then the repairs that have to be made, they're expensive to all ratepayers, and that actually raises the rates for everybody who is complying with the law. So in fact, having sufficient penalties to make people comply with the law and not do things that degrade the system can actually have the effect of reducing rates for residential regular ratepayers.
All right. I would just suggest that if you have the raise of the penalties, that you show that the penalties that you have right now do not cover the costs of the damage to the equipment or to the system. And I haven't heard that. So if you say to me, okay, we need to raise the penalties because we're losing money on this and people are consistently doing these terrible things, that makes sense. However, I haven't heard that. So statistically, I think you need to show the people of Portland that you are losing money on the penalties that are set right now. So you're in the deficit. And I don't think the Water Department is in the deficit. It seems to be a golden cow for everybody.
This is the Bureau of Environmental Services.
But they're part of the Water Department. You and I have this argument. I know they're separate, but they come under that department. It's a spring off from that department.
Actually, it isn't, Joe. I mean, you can say that, but it isn't.
You and I disagree on it. Who controls the environmental people? Is it the Department of Water?
Have nothing to do. They're separate bureaus.
Yeah, in answer to my question, who controls the environmental department? Is it the Department of Water?
No.
Do they sit on top?
No.
Okay. I can be wrong. Don't tell anybody.
Thank you for your testimony.
Commissioner Fritz, between that, this is just going to go to our second reading. I'll go ahead. Yeah.
Well, I just wanted to say, while we're on the matter dealing with BES, we had a rather we had something on the consent agenda today that went rather unheralded, and I think it deserves notice, and that is the certificate of the final completion for the East Side Big Pipe, a $370 million project with only $7 million in change orders over some 2,004 days, and the final budget. It was completed on time, and it was completed actually 2.8% under budget. So I just want to say, you know, congratulations to BES for a job well done. And it's even though we've heralded it in the past, I just thought we shouldn't let this pass without some comment. And my thanks to all the people at BES, Dean Marriott, and Commissioner Fish, if you would please extend my thanks to the previous commissioner in charge of BES for this good work, too. I appreciate that.
I sure will.
Just wanted to make that comment.
Thank you. Commissioner Fritz, what's that noise? Oh, sorry. Turn this off. What I would propose, since this regulatory improvement project has spanned four leaders, Mayor Adams, Commissioner Saltzman, Mayor Hales, and me, bring it home. I've heard two issues raised in our discussion today. One has to do about public process, and second has to do with how we calculated penalties and are they proportionate to the offense. And I would be pleased between now and next week to come to share answers to my colleagues and post it on my website, answers for the public, and then we can revisit it if it's the will of the council next week. I think they were both good questions, and I'd be happy to address them in greater detail following this hearing.
Excellent suggestion. Thank you. And so that's what we'll do. I appreciate it being a non-emergency ordinance so that that does give this public hearing as a way of publicizing what's going on. And if we can get those answers and have another opportunity for discussion next week, that will work well. So this item 744 moves to second reading. Thank you. And so then we just have the item pulled from consent, item 737.
Authorize contract and provide for payment for construction of the Portland Police Training Center remodel project at an estimated cost of $4,300,000.
Thank you. Who pulled this item?
Joe Walsh pulled it.
Okay. Good morning, commissioners. I'm Mike Krebs. I'm the acting assistant chief for the Portland Police Bureau assigned to the Services Bureau branch that oversees training. Next to me on my left is Rich Attridge. He is the project manager for the remodel for the training division. And on my right is Lieutenant Jeff Miller, who worked for the training division. First of all, I want to thank you guys for giving us the training facility we have right now. It's an amazing thing for us. When I first got here in 92 and up until about now, we were traveling from facility to facility to provide our training. And so I want to thank you for that. We knew when we bought this new training facility, it would need to be remodeled. The facilities, I think most of you have probably visited it, and we need to take that and turn that into a state-of-the-art training facility, which allows us to give the best and most efficient training to our police officers, which in turn allows us to give better customer service to the people we serve in the city. And that cost about $4.3 million. And what we want to do is, with this money, we would remodel the facility. It's going to take about 6 months. Once we get the money, we would put it out for bid for a contractor, and we're hoping to start construction in probably January of 14 and looking for completion sometime about next year at this time in 2014. Next to me, I'd like to have Rich Attridge just talk a little bit about the process, what's next for us.
Well, again, my name is Rich Attridge. I'm project manager with Office of Management and Finance, working with the police for the training center. My understanding is approval of this ordinance is a requirement to eventually allow us to enter into a construction contract, which we estimated at $4.3 million. Our plan at this point is to try to get out to bid here at the end of the summer or at the, during the latter part of the summer and bring a contract before you at the end of the year, which will be the contract for construction, and then start construction in January, February of 2014.
One of the things we've considered, we've looked closely at the budget. We are very cognizant of the city's, you know, restraints on funds. One of the things, we're getting what we need, but not necessarily what we want. So we understand the needs between want and need, and I think this training facility will get the things that we need without going beyond and getting everything that we want. Hope that kind of makes sense. We were just very budget conscious to make sure that we're good stewards of the public's money.
I'd just like to thank Council for the continued support for this project. I've been involved shortly after its inception. It's an exciting process. It's one that's going to move the Portland Police Bureau several steps forward. And not only that, but we're going to be able to offer this facility, hopefully, to metro area law enforcement agencies, Portland Fire Bureau, and other metropolitan agencies that can use this facility in a training capacity. So it's exciting. We're progressing as we expect. And we're just working through the process, and it's an exciting process. So thanks for your continued support.
Questions from council? Thank you very much.
Okay, thanks.
Does anybody want to testify on this?
Yes, we have four people signed up. The first three, please, coming up are Joe Walsh, Joseph Gordon, and Joel Sievers.
Thank you. Just as a reminder, ordinance is on whether to authorize the contract and provide for payment on construction of the project.
Good morning. My name is Joe Walsh, and I represent Individuals for Justice. We have a late request, and unfortunately for you, Commissioner Fritz, we're going to drop it on you. We're going to ask you to look at this and make sure that the contracts were done the way they're supposed to be done, that they were open, that they were fair, that the people that did the work or are going to do the work went through the process the way they're supposed to. We have no way of knowing that at the moment, but that was a request, and I'm just relating that to you. The amount of money for this training center seems very large to me. $4 million is a lot of money. So I hope all of you stay and watch how they perform and utilize this training center. There's some stuff that we would like to see done in training. For instance, to train the new police officers that they always do not have to have control. That they can be on an equal level to, say, myself, an activist. And that happened to me recently. I talked to you a little bit about that last week. Those police officers that approached me and actually put me under arrest treated me on an equal level. They were not interested in control. They were interested in de-escalating what was going on. And it worked. And they were good. And I bragged about them, which is very unusual for me.
So may I just get you back on what was your specific concern with this contract that's gone through the regular contracting bidding process?
The request is that our organization does not completely trust the police department or the people that lend out these contracts under that police department direction. So we're concerned that the contracts themselves be open, be fair, be advertised. And we have this tendency in institutions to go back over and over to the same contractors because we know them. And it's a very human thing to do. So we're just asking you to check whatever you can do. And that's our request. Thank you.
And in response, this contract went through the regular procurement services process through the Office of Management and Finance.
Yeah, if they went through the normal process and it wasn't claimed that this is the only company that can do this type of work, that's a red flag, because that's buddies, you know. You can always find companies that can do the work if you really look. So that's what we're worried about that.
Thank you. I understand your question.
Okay.
Hello. My name is Joseph, a.k.a. Tequila. $4.5 million to tell a police officer, don't shoot them because they look like a gangster, or don't, pull them over because they look like white trash from, the trailer park. $4.5 million. Let's see. My comrade, I came across very respectful, nice, polite, professional police officers in this town, and I don't think it takes $4.5 million to train the ones pretty much don't shoot them. I mean, it's just...
Just interrupt you, because this is about the remodeling contract.
Yes, the remodeling, yes. Remodeling, $4.5 million by the remodeling contract together. What else in the facility? Do they need more computers to tell people to be polite? There's parts. Shut them down and train in there. It's free of cost, and you save the city $4.5 million. Miami, they do their training in parks and local parks. They're good at closing down parks. I mean, I'm for sure of that one. And $4.5 million. I mean, I could come. I came and come to the city council and asked for a reference to get an apartment. We have the money and everything. But someone can just come here and just say we need $4.5 million to remodel. Well, we have two people here with the income of $2,000 a month. Came and found a house, and we went yesterday everywhere. I mean, in St. John's, and the man said, oh, no wonder I don't have to put up a rent sign, because there's housing is so high of demand. And it goes back to the contracts of $4.5 million for remodeling. I mean, we love to talk about children in the city, but when the children grow up, there's not going to be no housing. It's going to be, I just don't get this. I mean, I get the child clogged up with massive work and massive complaints. I'm just not getting it. And then we come to a 4.5 remodeling of police training. When, let's say, with the last training place, I guess you're going to put the blame on the training. No, it's just common sense. I come across police officers that's professional, that's polite, and everything else. And some are just plain out bullies. Let's save the city some money and fire those and rehire. To show an example, we won't put up with this. It's much cheaper than $4.5 million. And, after this, I'm going to do some protesting, and we're going to go apartment searching again. And I'm not going to ask the city this time, because I can't ask for the $4.5 million or anything like that. We just got, a little $2,600 saved up, as our banking account. But I just think long and hard, $4.5 million for something that should be just common sense. The ones who's not doing their jobs, fire them. And don't replace them with a fire them, and rehire them, and maybe the last ones. $4.5 million. That's just outrageous.
Thank you for your testimony.
Thank you,
sir.
Yeah, I didn't notice a homeless issue.
Could you just docket. Give us your name for the record, please?
Joel Severs. I didn't notice a homeless issue docket, but there's people sleeping out in front of the federal building, and tomorrow that building is going to open up, and if anything happens, people are going to rage hell in this city, no doubt about it. But yeah, we did go apartment searching yesterday, and we talked to my probation officer, and he said, you need to pay $100 up front for us to transfer your probation to Vancouver, when you can actually find an apartment for $450, two-bedroom, in Vancouver. Okay, and then it's like a $35 application fee. Some places charge a $45 application fee, and I find it quite ridiculous. we were out over by the St. John's area, over by the park, and there's a lot, a huge lot, that says for lease. I don't know if you guys ever seen that, but it's huge. Which you could build, you know, a low-income apartment. And also, I mean, I did wish to speak. If people are at a Portland Rescue Mission or somewhere, they should get an ID that has their name, date of birth, where they're from, and they could use that as an ID in Oregon. Also, if people are spanging for money, they should pay $20 a month. And with this money, it goes into a homeless bank. And with this homeless bank, it will go to building a low-income apartment facility way better than TPI. We really need to start something. The money that comes from street roots should also go into this homeless bank. Let's separate from big banks and start up a whole new bank, a community homeless bank or a community homeless reserve bank, which sounds really good. And let's see, what else? What else do we need? What else? Money? Money, money. For some of us, money is no problem. For a lot of us, money is no problem. But for all of us, a lot of us, money is a problem. So,
thank you very much for your testimony.
Yeah, no problem.
Did we have those others signed
we
up?
We have Charles Johnson, and we also have a request for someone who didn't get to speak.
Yeah.
Who's asking to speak.
Anybody else who wants to testify on this, please come forward right now. And reminder, we're voting and taking testimony on the contract and providing for payment for construction at the police facility. Mr. Johnson.
Thank you, Commissioner Fritz, President Fritz. I think one thing that might have been helpful is, as you know, the Portland Police Bureau are one of the most popular topics, if not the most popular agencies. And some framing from the staff about how this $4.5 million capital cost relates to actual human development expenses in training. I think when this sits on the printed agenda under an item that has more specifics about bid numbers, I think people can feel a little bit more comfortable about how this $4.3 million fits into the picture of the costs that will come from the Department of Justice settlement, the staffing levels, and I'll be getting in touch with the police bureau to get like more specifics exactly. Are we actually remodeling a place where they're going to remember to have a desk for the positions that we have, because the United States government is trying to help us fix our police department with the DOJ settlement? The other issue that's before us is we have a weird structure in the police department where we like to believe we have progressive leadership, and Chief Reese and Lieutenant Marshman was here earlier, who are trying to give us the best of policing, and yet the average line police officer is resistant to the DOJ settlement and the idea of a peer relationship between community members and people with a badge or a gun or a taser. So I think that when we look at this $4.3 million expenditure and the fact that we're in negotiations with the police department, we just need to be honest about the weird situation of figuring out what carrots work for the cops who only care about collecting a check versus the cops who are more focused on improving the quality of policing in the city. Thank you.
To clarify, this ordinance authorizes the procurement services to go out, get bids, and get the lowest responsible bidder. So it's just a step in the process.
Okay, thanks. That's just a little bit unclear from the way the items are on the agenda, with it being listed under 736 with another bid that had the procurement numbers. Thank you.
Right. If you click on the ordinance, then it says right in the ordinance. And just so that folks know, that's what my staff do and all of our staffs do when things are on consent. It doesn't mean that we don't look into it. We leave it on. If it's left on consent, it means that we're all okay with it.
And I do want to thank you for getting it for being pulled so that we could have this clarity.
Sure. Great. Thank you. Ma'am.
Hi, my name is Marilyn. I've never testified here before. I didn't start coming here until you guys pushed the fluoride. That made me disgusted. Okay, what I heard from that officer back there is he wanted all this money so he could improve on customer service. I want him to come back up here and tell me how he is going to improve, how he is going to stop killing citizens in Portland, how he's going to stop harassing people. Please come up here and tell me how you're going to improve on that. I am tired of the lawsuits. I'm tired of the killings. I am tired of it. So please